I think it's fair to assume that every one of us faces trials and hardships, struggles, difficulties, sadness, loss, heartache, heartbreak at some point in our lives. What I want us to think about this morning is, how do we let those things affect our lives? How do we let those things affect our outlook and our perspective on life? Are we overcome by them? Are we ready to just throw our hands up and give up? You know, throw in the towel, so to speak? Or maybe you sometimes feel so overwhelmed by the situation that you feel like, boy, I wish I could just crawl under a rock and go to sleep until this storm passes. Or do we see these trials, these struggles, these difficulties in life, do we see them as opportunities to grow? Do we see them as opportunities to glorify our God? This morning, I want to look at the account of the death and resurrection of Lazarus and see what that teaches us. Because I think the powerful lesson here that I really want to drive home is that not all trials or sickness or even death end in despair, but rather can have a purpose to glorify God. So let's begin by actually just reading this account in John chapter 11 and then going back and making some observations and applications from it to our lives. Beginning in verse 1, the text says, "Now a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. And it was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. So the sister sent word to him, saying, 'Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick.' But when Jesus heard this, he said, 'This sickness is not to end in death, but for the glory of God, so that the Son of Man may be glorified by it.' Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that he was sick, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to his disciples, 'Let us go to Judea again.' The disciples said to him, 'Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and are you going there again?' And Jesus answered, 'Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him.' This he said, and after that he said to them, 'Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go so that I may awaken him out of sleep.' The disciples then said to him, 'Well, Lord, if he's fallen asleep, he will recover.' Now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought he was speaking of literal sleep. So Jesus then said to them plainly, 'Lazarus is dead. And I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him.' Therefore Thomas, who is called Didymus, said to his fellow disciples, 'Let us go also, so that we may die with him.' So when Jesus came, he found that he had already been in the tomb 4 days. For Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. Martha, therefore, when she heard that Jesus was coming, went to meet him, but Mary stayed at the house. Martha then said to Jesus, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you.' And Jesus said to her, 'Your brother will rise again.' Martha said to him, 'I know that he'll rise again in the resurrection of the last day.' And Jesus said to her, 'I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even if he dies, and everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?' She said to him, 'Yes, Lord, I have believed that you are the Christ, the Son of God, even he who comes into the world.' Then she said, when she had said this, she went away and called Mary, her sister, saying, 'Secretly, the teacher is here and he's calling for you.' And when she heard it, she got up quickly and was coming to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha met him. And when the Jews who were with her in the house and consoling her saw that Mary got up quickly and went out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Therefore, when Mary came where Jesus was, she saw him and fell at his feet, saying to him, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.' When Jesus, therefore, saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and was troubled. And he said, 'Where have you laid him?' And they said to him, Lord, come and see. And Jesus wept. So the Jews were saying, see how he loved him? But some of them said, could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind have kept this man also from dying? So Jesus, again, being deeply moved within, came to the tomb. Now it was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, remove the stone. Martha, the sister of the deceased, said to him, Lord, by this time there will be a stench, for he has been dead 4 days. Jesus said to her, did I not say to you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they removed the stone. Then Jesus raised his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but because of the people standing around, I said it so that they may believe that you sent me. And when he said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And the man who had died came forth, bound hand and foot with wrappings, and his face was wrapped around with a cloth. And Jesus said to them, unbind him and let him go. Therefore, many of the Jews who came to Mary and saw what he had done believed in him. A pretty awesome account of what's happening here. But I want to kind of go back, and I want you to notice a few things about this account of Lazarus' death. The first thing I want you to notice about this situation is that Jesus knew about the sickness of Lazarus. He had been informed about the fact that his friend was sick, and so he was not ignorant of the condition of Lazarus. Yet, despite the fact that Jesus was aware, and the fact that he could have intervened, that is, he could have done something about it. He had the power, the ability to heal his sick friend, right? That's why at least 3 times in this account, various people are saying, Lord, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. Or isn't this the guy who opened the blind eyes of people? Couldn't he have kept his friend from dying? And certainly the answer to that question is, yes, Jesus could have done those things. In other words, you could say the situation, at least from Jesus' perspective, was totally preventable. Jesus could have healed Lazarus. He could have brought an end to his physical suffering and pain and spared him from the agony of death. And if he had done that, there would have been no reason for all of the mourning and the feelings of loss and heartache by those who were left behind after Lazarus passed away. But even though Jesus could have intervened, Jesus purposefully chose not to intervene, at least not yet. You notice there in verse 6, when he heard that he was sick, he then stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Instead of setting out immediately to go see his friend, to get there to heal him, Jesus purposefully, intentionally delays. In fact, later on, in verse 14 and 15, he'll say that when he informs his disciples that Lazarus, in fact, is dead, he says, and I'm glad that I wasn't there. And you think that sounds really weird, right? This guy who could have saved his friend, who could have healed him, he's actually glad that he wasn't there in order to save him and heal him. And that's because Jesus realizes that there's a bigger purpose, a bigger plan to what's going on here. And let me set our minds at ease. The fact that he delays and allows Lazarus to go ahead and die and doesn't heal him is in no way indicative of a lack of love on the part of the Lord for his friend Lazarus, right? It said there in verse 5, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. He loved all of them. And so the fact that he allows this to happen is in no way an indication that Jesus somehow doesn't care about his friends or that he doesn't love them or want what is best for them. And that brings us to the last point that I want us to see is that even though it seemed bad, Jesus didn't allow the situation to end in despair, but rather he used it as an opportunity to glorify God. And as a result, we read there in the text that when many saw what he had done, raising Lazarus from the dead, they themselves believed in Jesus, the same as Martha had expressed her belief in Jesus, that he is the Christ, that he's the Son of God, the one who came into the world to save a lost humanity. Well, what does that have to do with us? We have trials. We have sufferings. We have sickness. And it may be different than that which we read about in this account of Lazarus getting sick and dying and the effect that that had on his family. Perhaps your suffering, your trial is something that is related to work or career. Maybe it's that you've lost a job. You know, maybe your company was downsizing and you found yourself as low man on the totem pole, and so you're out of work now. Or maybe the company is shutting down, or, you know, back in the day, maybe Caterpillar was going on a strike, and so you're out of work. You've got to work the picket lines or whatever the case may be, but you're not making money right now. Maybe it's that you just didn't do a very good job at work and you're getting fired because you're not a very good worker. I don't know what the case may be. Maybe because of this loss of job, it's forced you to think about having to relocate, to move somewhere else to find gainful employment, which you realize is going to uproot your whole family, and it's going to have an effect on your kids, and they're going to have to get pulled out of school, and they're going to have to go and make new friends, and you're going to be in a different place where you don't know anybody yet, and that maybe just seems like such an overwhelming prospect. Maybe you've made some bad investments. You got involved in some bad business ventures. You know, that project that you thought that was going to turn out well, and you sunk all of your savings into it, it didn't pan out. And so now you're kind of left with a double mortgage on your house and no way to pay for it because your business venture has failed. Maybe you even have to file bankruptcy because things at work just didn't turn out well. Maybe your trials are more of the relational nature. Maybe it's that there's constant argument and disagreement with those that you're closest with. You know, there's always this kind of exchange of unkind, biting words. Maybe there's even slandering of one another, that is speaking evil of one another, whether that's to their face or behind your back. Maybe it involves abuse, maybe physical abuse, maybe emotional abuse, maybe verbal abuse. There's just constant fighting and conflict in your home or in your relationships. Maybe you've experienced a breakup recently. You know, that guy that you really liked and you thought was going to be, you know, the love of your life, he dumped you because he found some other fling. Maybe he cheated on you. Maybe he lied to you, broke the trust. Maybe you've experienced some type of betrayal or disappointment in a relationship of yours. Maybe it was at work even. Maybe like a coworker lied about you in order to get you in trouble, to make themselves look good. Maybe you were maligned to your boss or your coworkers or to your neighbors or to your community. Maybe those that you thought were your friends were going around and gossiping about you behind your back, speaking ill of you. Maybe it was true what they were saying, but it was with the intent of making you look bad to other people. It certainly wasn't because they cared about you and wanted to help you overcome whatever the struggle or difficulty was in your life or the problem that you were facing. They just got their jollies of talking about your struggles and problems. And that hurts. Maybe it was an affair in a marriage. Your spouse, the one whom you loved, whom you had committed your life to, has been unfaithful to you. You slept with another. What about terrible health circumstances? You receive a diagnosis of cancer or heart disease. Maybe you've suffered a stroke, or you've developed, maybe even for some inexplicable reason, cirrhosis of the liver. Maybe you have chronic asthma or COPD, or you've got diabetes that requires constant medication, or chronic arthritis, or maybe macular degeneration. Maybe you've developed MS, multiple sclerosis, or Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, or Alzheimer's, or Parkinson's, or, you know, whatever. The list could go on and on of different diseases that people are diagnosed with every day. Maybe you're the victim of tragedy, a vehicular accident. Maybe a drunk driver hit you. Maybe you were out on the ATVs and you had a wreck and someone died or was maimed. Maybe it was a motorcycle accident Someone you loved was in a motorcycle accident and lost their life. Maybe it was a house fire. Or maybe your house was destroyed by a tornado, depending on where you live. Maybe it was by an earthquake or a hurricane comes and washes it away, floods everything out, destroys all of your possessions. Maybe you're the victim of a crime. You've been robbed or mugged in the past. Maybe at gunpoint or knife point. Maybe you've had your home invaded. You've been the victim of theft and, you know, home theft. Maybe you're the victim of rape. Maybe you or someone you love has even been murdered by someone else. Maybe you've experienced the untimely death of a loved one. Maybe that was a child. Maybe it was a newborn. Maybe it was a miscarriage. We all experience various trials, different forms of suffering and heartache. But here's what I want you to understand. Just as Jesus was not ignorant of Lazarus' situation, he is not ignorant of your condition either. God knows what you're going through. He knows the details and the specifics of what it is that's causing your heart to ache. He knows the extent of your struggle that you're having right now in this moment. And what's more, he can intervene. That is, he has the power to do something about it. There is, theoretically, a sense in which God could just make it stop. He's that powerful. But, just like with the account of Lazarus, oftentimes Jesus chooses not to intervene. Often he purposely chooses not yet. And remember, that's not an indication of a lack of love for us by God. It's his lack of intervening is not justification for us to say, well, God, you don't love me. If you love me, you would make this stop. No, that's not true. Because sometimes he has a purpose that's bigger than what we can see or even understand or comprehend while we're in the moment. Yes, maybe we'll look back on it years later and we'll say, I understand now, God, what your big purpose was for me to go through that suffering, that hardship, that trial, that terrible time in my life. I didn't see it then. I didn't understand why. In the moment, I was hurting. And I wanted nothing more but for the pain to stop. But you said in your wisdom, not yet, because you had bigger plans. Let's take a side quest real quick. That's what we call it in class when we get distracted on something. There's a couple ways that we could look at why we face these trials. The first one that jumped out at me when I'm reading the account of Lazarus is it seems like Lazarus suffers and dies because Jesus wasn't near enough to him. If you had been here, Lord, my brother wouldn't have had to die. Three times at least that's said to Jesus. And so I wonder, is our sufferings, our trials, our hardships, are those things a result of us not being near enough to Jesus? That he isn't present in our lives? So just as Jesus wasn't there or present with Lazarus, Mary, and Martha, which if he had been, the tragedy, the sorrow, the pain, the suffering, the death, it could have all been avoided. Is it true that sometimes we too find ourselves in terrible situations or circumstances that is, we're going through really hard times because we've made bad choices? Because we've wandered away from the presence of God? And so in that moment, in that trial, in that difficulty, I'm going through this because God's not here with me, because I've left him? Is that true? I would say yes. Sometimes that is indeed the case. We are like the prodigal son who has wandered away from the father. We've gone off into the distant country and we've got involved in all sorts of trouble and we've ruined our own lives because of our own stupidity and selfishness and foolishness. Whereas if we had remained at the side of God, That is, if we had submitted ourselves to his will, if we had done things his way rather than our own way, we would have avoided much of the trouble that we experience in our lives. So yes, sometimes our trials are a direct result of being away from the presence of God. Keep your finger there in John chapter 11, but turn to Romans chapter 1. In Romans chapter 1, Paul paints this picture of people who, even though they know God, even though they recognize these immutable characteristics of God, and they can see it even in the creation of the world, they choose not to acknowledge God, but rather to pursue their own lusts. And he says about these people in verse 22 of Romans chapter 1, professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures. And notice what God does when they reject him. Verse 24, therefore God gave them over in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, so that their bodies would be dishonored among them. God says, you want to go your own way? I'm not going to twist your arm. I'm not going to force you to do the right thing. I'm not going to force you to do what is best for you, what you were designed to do. If you have the boundaries to reject me, I'll let you go your own way. And that is going to result in pain and hardship and ruin. And unless we turn our lives around and turn back towards him, hopelessness. People who walk away from God. Notice verse 28. Just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do the things which are not proper. Well, what are these things? Being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice, gossip, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful, deserving of death. God gave them over to that. They said, God, I don't want to be with you. And God says, well, you don't have to be with me. But when we get out of the presence of God and do things our way, oftentimes it leads to that kind of a predicament. So that's one way we could look at our trials and hardships. But let me suggest to you that's not the only way. I would also suggest to you, even based on this account here in John chapter 11, that our suffering, our trials, our hardships happen despite God's closeness to our lives. In other words, sometimes the bad things happen irregardless. They happen no matter what. I find it so interesting in the text here that Jesus only delayed for how many days when he heard the news? 2 days. And yet when he arrives, Lazarus has already been in the tomb how many days? 4 days. And so if you're like me and you think about math and you're like, wait a minute, I got to add this up. How's this working out? You know, it's a little bit difficult because we don't know exactly where Jesus was at when this news reaches him. The indication from John chapter 10 and verse 40 is that he is somewhere close to where John the Baptist had been baptizing. So the assumption is on the east side of the Jordan River, somewhere in Perea. Perhaps as close as 1 day's journey from Bethany, which is just outside of Jerusalem. And so some people in their effort to figure out this chronology have suggested that it took 1 day, day one, for the messengers to be sent from Bethany to where Jesus was at and tell him, hey, Lazarus is sick. Jesus then waits for 2 days, days 2 and 3. And then on the 4th day, leaves where he's at and makes the 1 day long journey to Bethany. And when he arrives, he finds that Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. Now, that's a little bit of conjecture, but it would fit. But if that is in fact the case, that means that Lazarus, if he's already been dead for 4 days when Jesus arrives on the 4th day, Lazarus was already dead when the messengers finally arrived to tell Jesus, hey, he's sick. Which means, even if Jesus had left in that very moment and gone straight to Bethany, even if he ran, even if he teleported, Lazarus was already dead. And we think, well, why this big complaint about the fact that, you know, Lord, if you were here, you could have healed him. And maybe some of us like, why did you have to go away into Perea? Why couldn't you have just stayed over here? If you hadn't left and stayed here, he would still be alive. But I want to suggest to you also that His disciples were well aware of the fact that distance was not an obstacle to his healing ability. Think about the centurion's slave in Capernaum. The centurion's slave is sick, and he sends some other servants to Jesus there in the city and says, "Hey, my slave is sick. Can you heal him?" And Jesus says, "All right, let's go." And he says, No. You don't have to come to my house. Just say the word, and he'll be healed." And so Jesus says, "Okay, he's healed." He didn't have to be physically present, right? But that's kind of in the same town. But think about this. There was another occasion prior to this when Jesus is again in Cana of Galilee, and there's a nobleman who lives in Capernaum, 20 miles away, and his son is sick. And so he goes and makes this 20-mile journey to see Jesus, and he says, "Lord, my son is sick. Can you come and heal him?" And Jesus says, "Just go. He's going to be fine." And the man believes, and he sets off for home. And when he's about home, his servants come running out and say, "Hey, your son is well." And he's like, "Hey, what time did he start getting well?" And they're like, "Well, at such and such time." He's like, "That's exactly the time Jesus said." So there aren't geographical limitations on Jesus' ability to heal, right? So what I'm suggesting is that sometimes things happen, bad things happen, even when God is present in our lives. Another way of thinking about that is to say that our trials may not be an indication of an absence of God in our lives, but rather that God has a bigger plan and a purpose for us in the trial. As much as we would like, as much as we would try to petition or maybe even beg God to remove the obstacle, to remove the suffering, to remove the hardship, that's not always what's best in the end. It may be easier and more comfortable for us if we don't have to go through it, but that's not what would bring God the most glory. Ultimately, I think if our tragedy, if our trial, for it to not end in despair, but to the glory of God, is going to be dependent a lot upon us and our attitude and perspective towards the trial. You remember what James says in James chapter 1, beginning in verse 2? "Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials." Why? "Knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." Paul would say to the Romans in Romans chapter 5, "Therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom also we obtained our introduction by faith into this grace in which we stand, and we exult in the hope of the glory of God." We can rejoice and praise God because of the hope that he's given us in saving us from our sins, adopting us into our family. But notice what Paul says. He says, not only this, verse 3, but we also exult in our tribulations, knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance, and perseverance proven character, and proven character hope, and hope does not disappoint, because the love of God has been poured out within our hearts through the Holy Spirit who was given to us. When you think back on that list of traumatic experiences that we talked about earlier, I have seen, and I know you have seen, situations where there is a tragic death in a family. And yet, looking back on that now, we can see the great good that God wrought in that situation. You know personally how a marriage can be threatened, and yet, in spite of infidelity, because of the godly response of the families and the desire to stand for what's right, and the desire to be forgiving and merciful and gracious, we've seen how marriages that were on the brink of falling apart have been restored, and how lives have been brought to the Lord and been saved through his redeeming sacrifice. guys, as much as we would like to avoid the trials, we need to recognize that, as that song says, there is treasure in the trial, not in the absence of it. I don't know what trial you are presently experiencing in your life this morning, but whatever it is, however big, however bad, I want to implore you to approach it with the attitude of faith and trust in God. Let's think and meditate and contemplate. What purpose does God have for me in this trial? What am I supposed to learn from this trial about myself, about my weaknesses or about my strengths, about my interaction with other people? What am I supposed to learn from this trial about the gospel message, about God's grace and mercy and love? How can I allow this trial to be something that will glorify my God? And once we've contemplated that, I want to encourage you to implement it, to act and behave in a way that through your struggle, God can be seen and glorified, and we can draw ourselves and others closer to Him. And I want you to remember the promise that Jesus made here to Martha when He was speaking to her. He said, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in Me will live even if he dies, and everyone who lives and believes in Me will never die." My question to you this morning is the same question Jesus asked Martha. Do you believe this?